Here is the Cannabis Bee News with your host, Joe Jameson.
Hello, listeners. How are you doing today? This is episode CBN 026, 4/10/2013. Let's roll into article number one. For legal pot sellers, a big tax problem. Take it away, B.
For legal pot sellers, a big tax problem. By Grace Hood. Source, NPR.org. An obscure tax code provision crafted for drug dealers is giving state-licensed medical marijuana dispensaries a headache. In Colorado, federal income tax rates for dispensaries can soar as high as 70% because of a tax code section that does not allow businesses to claim certain deductions. The section is known as 280E, and it was originally written for illegal drug traffickers. But today, it's a thorn in the side of licensed dispensary owners like Erica Freeman. Freeman is co-owner of Choice Organics in Fort Collins, Colo. Two tax court decisions over the past 6 years have sent confusing messages about which deductions the industry can make. In 2012, Freeman wrote off the costs associated with growing pot, but she didn't deduct anything related to the sale of medical marijuana like advertising costs. We all feel like we are legitimate businesses. We have licenses, but yet I'm still unable to write these things off and I'm still treated as an illegal business, Freeman says. Freeman says existing tax code could make Colorado's expansion to recreational marijuana use very tricky for business owners. The uncertain tax climate is the direct product of state and federal law clashing on medical marijuana policy in the 18 states where it's legal. The end result right now, according to Colorado accountant Jim Marty, is income taxes rates that are much higher compared with those paid by other small businesses. If they were in a normal business, their top bracket would be about 45%. But if you have to pay tax on your gross profit and not your net income, the calculations I've done puts the federal and state income tax at about 70%, Marty says. The financial picture translates into some soul searching for dispensaries, Marty says. He's an accountant for 75 dispensaries in the state. Some take a conservative approach to deductions. Others are claiming all deductions as a type of protest. In true IRS fashion, Marty explains there's a form for that. And if they chose to go down that road, we do include that form with the tax return and tell the IRS that we agree to disagree with them, Marty says. Doing that, he says, means basically expecting an IRS audit. Marty is actively working on 6 audits with the Internal Revenue Service. He expects at least one of his clients to challenge the IRS deduction policy in Colorado court this year. For its part, the IRS has been relatively quiet on the topic while it continues to apply the 280E tax rule to dispensaries. The agency declined interview requests for this story. The silence has been frustrating to San Francisco attorney Henry Wickowski, an expert on the topic. This is inherently unfair, Wickowski says. Wickowski has represented sellers in the 2 existing court cases that provide the only guideposts on how the law applies to dispensaries. And the results have been mixed. He says he's repeatedly sought more specific guidelines from the IRS but has come up short. It punishes the dispensary owners who are trying to comply with the law and rewards those that ignore their obligation to file tax returns, he says. In the meantime, Colorado dispensary owner Freeman says she'll continue to meet all her tax obligations. But she says a fix is desperately needed. Those people the 280E was written for didn't have a license hanging on their wall from the state of Colorado that says you are legal to do business, Freeman says. Medical or recreational marijuana use is now legal in 1/3 of all states. The legal limbo can be resolved by either Congress or the courts. Until then, dispensary owners will have one more reason to dread income tax day.
Article number 2. Too stone to drive. Marijuana DUI bill passes Colorado House. There it is, B. Take it away.
Too stone to drive? Marijuana DUI bill passes Colorado House. By Matt Ferner. Source, The Huffington Post. A bill that sets a legal limit for THC in the motorist's bloodstream passed in the Colorado House on Tuesday. Under House Bill 1114, drivers caught with 5 nanograms THC, the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana that produces the high sensation, in their blood would be considered to be driving under the influence of marijuana and could be ticketed similarly to a person who was considered to be too drunk to drive. HB 1114 now needs one more vote in the House before it goes to the Senate. Read the full text of HB 1114 here. This is about traffic safety in the state of Colorado, said bill sponsor Republican Rhonda Fields D'Aurora. The Denver Post reports this bill will send a very strong message that no longer can you get behind the wheel after smoking marijuana. This is the fourth time in 3 years that the state house has supported a marijuana DUI bill. However, all previous attempts have failed in the Senate in years past. But this year, Republican Mark Waller of Colorado Springs, the bill's other sponsor, thinks that a standard blood THC limit is more critical with the passage of Amendment 64, which legalized marijuana for recreational use for adults. As in previous years when marijuana DUI bills have come up for debate, opponents say that the 5 nanogram standard is too low for frequent pot smokers, especially medical marijuana patients, who regularly have this level of THC in the bloodstream and therefore, if passed, these people would lose their driving privileges, the Denver Post reports. But Waller says that this bill is different than the previous bills because it allows for a person who has been charged with having 5 nanograms of THC in their blood to rebut the charge that they are too impaired to drive, according to 7 News. For example, if you did not exhibit poor driving, you can put that on as evidence to say, look, my driving was not poor, I'm not unsafe to operate a motor vehicle, Waller said during the hearing. Waller also said he would have preferred this bill to be a so-called per se limit bill. All 3 of the previous failed marijuana DUI bills were per se bills, meaning if a driver tested above the legal 5 nanogram limit, the result would be an automatic conviction nearly every time. But are drivers measurably impaired while under the influence of marijuana like they clearly are when under the influence of alcohol? That has been one of the core questions opponents of the bill have been asking about bills like these each year they are introduced. Westward spoke to attorney Leonard Freeling in 2012 over last year's marijuana DUI bill, who described the clear correlation between blood alcohol level and driving impairment. The higher the blood alcohol level, the more impaired drivers are. But he questions the correlation between marijuana blood levels and driving impairment, saying to Westward, that appears not to hold true as cleanly with cannabis. So talking about impaired driving is one thing, but trying to give a number meaning it doesn't have is something else entirely. Last year Senator Pat Steadman D. Denver spoke out about the issues that make marijuana blood limits problematic, like the fact that THC is fat soluble, so blood limits could remain above the 5 nanogram limit for days after the user last legally smoked pot, CBS4 reported. The user would not appear stoned, but legally they could still be considered impaired. With this thinking in mind, Steadman tried and failed to exempt medical marijuana patients in the bill. This fact of THC's different effect on the body than alcohol's was stunningly shown in 2011 by Westward pot reporter William Breathes. After a night of sleep and not smoking pot for 15 hours, a sober Breathe still tested nearly 3 times higher than the proposed legal limit. To add confusion to the matter, Washington State television station KIRO recently assembled a group of volunteers, had them smoke pot and set them loose on a driving test course to try and answer the question, how high is too high to drive? The less than scientific results, while entertaining, unfortunately don't add much clarity to the question at hand. A regular smoker of marijuana tested above the legal limit to begin with, yet drove without much of a problem. 2 casual smokers also navigated the course without incident. However, after smoking more marijuana, driving ability began to devolve quickly. Washington state voters, along with voters in Colorado, passed recreational marijuana amendments last November, but Washington, unlike Colorado, already passed a marijuana DUI bill in 2012 setting the legal impairment standard at 5 nanograms in the state. And in Washington, the enforcement of the law ultimately comes down to common sense, explains Bob Calkins, a Washington State Patrol spokesman, to the Oregonian, "We don't just pull people over and draw blood. If you're driving okay, we're not going pull you over. But driving impaired is still driving impaired." Watch KIRO's full stone driving segment here. The bill now advances to the House Appropriations Committee for another vote.
Article number 3. Study. Cannabis smoking associated with significantly better health outcomes than tobacco smoking. I don't know if we should even compare it, but take it away, B.
Study. Cannabis smoking associated with significantly better health outcomes than tobacco smoking. Source, normal.org. Randwick, Australia, adults who inhale cannabis report significantly better health outcomes than do those who smoke tobacco or a combination of both substances, according to exploratory survey data to be published in the journal Addictive Behaviors. Investigators at the University of New South Wales assessed the relationship between cannabis, tobacco, and combined cannabis-tobacco use and various health outcomes in 350 subjects age 40 and older. Authors reported that the cannabis-only subjects reported significantly better general health and fewer smoking-related health concerns compared to the tobacco-only group. Specifically, both tobacco smoking groups experienced significantly more mucus sputum than the other two groups, the cannabis-only group and controls. Cannabis-only subjects were less likely to report diagnoses of cancer and diabetes compared to all other groups, including controls. However, these differences did not achieve statistical significance. Overall, researchers reported, general health measures demonstrated a pattern in which the control and cannabis-only groups tended to report the best health, with the two tobacco-smoking groups faring worse. They concluded, cannabis-only users report better health than tobacco and cannabis-tobacco users. Mixing cannabis with tobacco may synergistically compromise health. A separate clinical trial published in 2012 in the Journal of the American Medical Association JAMA reported that subjects exposed to moderate doses of cannabis smoke long-term did not suffer from deficits in pulmonary function, but the subjects exposed to tobacco smoke did so. For more information, please contact Paul Armentano, Normal Deputy Director, at paul@normal.org. Full text of the study, Health Outcomes Associated with Long-Term Regular Cannabis and Tobacco Smoking, will appear in Addictive Behaviors.
Article number 4. Czech pharmacies begin selling medical marijuana.
Czech pharmacies begin selling medical marijuana. By Agence France Press. Source, The Raw Story. Medical marijuana legally went on sale Tuesday in pharmacies across the Czech Republic for patients suffering from cancer, Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis or psoriasis. The new law does not foresee health insurance coverage for marijuana, touted by some as a medical miracle drug. The prescription-only drug formally became legal on Monday, but was virtually unavailable as most pharmacies across the ex-communist European Union state of 10.5 million were closed over to the Easter long weekend. Prague will first import the drug for about a year, reportedly from Israel or the Netherlands, until the State Institute for Drug Control starts issuing licenses to local growers for a maximum of 5 years. The institute will also determine the crop area and organize tenders for marijuana purchases from farmers. An EU member since in 2004, the Czech Republic provides some of the most liberal access to soft drugs in Europe. People holding up to 15 grams 0.53 ounces of marijuana or growing up to 5 plants of cannabis risk just a small fine, an approach that often attracts smokers from other countries such as neighboring Poland, where tougher laws apply. A 2011 national report on narcotics said 16.1% of Czechs aged 15-34 admitted to having used marijuana in that year, down from 20.3% a year earlier.
Article number 5. Drug-sniffing dogs in Washington state now trained to ignore marijuana because it's legal.
Some drug-sniffing dogs in Washington state now trained to ignore marijuana because it's legal. By Associated Press. Source, Fox News. Seattle, the State Patrol and some other police agencies in Washington state are now training drug-sniffing dogs to ignore marijuana. After voters in November legalized the possession of small amounts of the drug, the Washington Association of Prosecuting Attorneys advised police agencies to change their standards. KOMO reports marijuana was removed from the police dog guidelines set by the Washington State Criminal Justice Training Commission. The Prosecuting Attorneys Association also told police that an alert from a drug-sniffing dog that had been trained to find marijuana is no longer enough evidence for a search warrant. Police will need other evidence, at least until the old dogs retire.
Article number 6. No slam dunk. Fed officials in Seattle want marijuana to remain illegal. Of course they do. It's a large portion of their job. Take it away, P.
No slam dunk. Fed official in Seattle wants marijuana to remain illegal. By the Pod Blog. Source, SeattlePI.com. If one locally based federal official is any indication, it's not a slam dunk that U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder will allow laws establishing state-controlled marijuana to fly under the federal drug enforcement radar. Holder said last Wednesday that his decision and remarks on how the Department of Justice will respond to legal marijuana in Washington and Colorado would come relatively soon. There's been no word from Holder or his office yet, but federal drug officials have been speaking out more frequently and negatively about the new pot laws. The director of the Northwest High Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas Program in Seattle, an arm of the Office of National Drug Control Policy that's headed by Drugs Aren't, former Seattle Police Chief Gil Kerlikowsk, says legal marijuana is a mistake and medical marijuana laws are a sham and should be repealed. I think, from my perspective, that marijuana is a controlled substance, Schedule I, and it's there on that list for a reason, and until the science tells us otherwise, that's where it should remain, said NWHIDTA Director Dave Rodriguez. I think medical marijuana is a sham. It has no basis in science, he said, adding that there are alternatives to smoking marijuana that meet FDA rules for what can be considered medication. He also said medical marijuana rules cause too much confusion for officers in the field trying to enforce drug laws. It would just be so much more helpful if all this medical marijuana nonsense would go away so we could deal with the real issue, he said. It's not a popular position, but I am not here running for office. Rodriguez has been the area's HIDTA director since the organization was created in 1997 and then funded by Congress a year later. The agency's main role is to act as a coordinator for federal, state and local law enforcement agencies as they go after drug traffickers and also to support drug courts and other efforts to curb drug use. Rodriguez said he, like the rest of us, doesn't know what Holder will say about the new marijuana rules. He also wouldn't say what, if anything, he would like Holder to say. Ramping up the rhetoric. His boss, Kerlikowsk, has been sounding increasingly more negative on marijuana, although he hasn't been as straightforward as Rodriguez. Last Thursday, as reported by the student newspaper at Marquette University in Milwaukee, WIS, Kerlikowsk agreed with President Obama that marijuana should not be federally legalized. I think we're in for a continuing, confusing time, Kerlikowsk said at a public meeting at the university. We don't see any of the science and the facts supporting legalization. Of course, Obama also said going after marijuana users would not be a top priority. It would not make sense for us to see a top priority as going after recreational users in states that have determined that it's legal, Obama told ABC News' Barbara Walters in December. We've got bigger fish to fry. However, what Obama didn't say was whether they would still go after growers and traffickers. This is a tough problem, because Congress has not yet changed the law, Obama said. I head up the executive branch. We're supposed to be carrying out laws. And so what we're going to need to have is a conversation about, how do you reconcile a federal law that still says marijuana is a federal offense and state laws that say that it's legal? Against it all. Rodriguez took issue with all of the key arguments for legalizing marijuana. 1. The war on drugs hasn't failed because there is no war on drugs. Kerlikowsk has made that remark over and over again. What there is there's a policy of blending of prevention, treatment, interdiction, strategies to help us best reduce drug use. They don't use resources to go after illegal drugs. We are focused on drug trafficking organizations. That's our focus. We are not focused on the drugs. These drug trafficking organizations have found that marijuana is a good product just like any of the other drugs out there for them to be involved in trafficking throughout our region because there is a demand for it and it's also a good money maker for them. And, legal marijuana will take this business from drug traffickers. I think that's a fallacious argument because I don't see how you're going to eliminate the black market as long as you have all the exceptions. You have an age limit, for one. Second, we're going to have a distribution network that will involve state oversight, and so the drug trafficking groups that would want to continue to traffic in marijuana won't be constrained by any of these artificial devices that the state will set up. They can continue to compete against whatever price point is set by the state for the sale of marijuana and probably undercut it at their will since they can grow anywhere whether inside or outside, whether inside the country or outside the country and flood the market whenever they feel like it. So I don't buy this argument that this legalization effort is going to drive them out of the business. In the end, of course, we're still at square one waiting for Holder to make a pronouncement about our marijuana laws. However, his senior advisors on drug policy don't appear to like the idea of state-controlled marijuana, and that has to be playing a role in Holder's decision-making.
Article number 7. Should medical marijuana be legalized for pets? If it doesn't hurt them, and it helps any sort of pain or anything they're dealing with, of course medical marijuana should be legalized for pets. Take it away, B.
Should medical marijuana be legalized for pets? By Lisa Spector. Source, care2.com. My readers know I think out of the box when it comes to pets. After all, I create music for dogs and cats soon that relieves anxiety issues. Canine sound therapy isn't exactly seen as a mainstream behavior solution in the pet world. I have put my reputation as a concert pianist on the line because of my deep desire to help improve the lives of dogs and cats. So, you can imagine how intrigued I was when I read about Dr. Doug Kramer, BVMS, MRCVS and Dogster. He is putting his professional veterinary career at risk to help relieve the pain and suffering of pets. He can't legally write a prescription for cannabis, but he can give recommendations. He provides professional consultations that included instructions in how to administer cannabis to pets. I recently had the pleasure of speaking to Dr. Kramer. My goal is to provide palliative care and prevent accidental overdoses resulting from owners' well-meaning attempts to relieve their pets' pain and suffering, he said. Dr. Kramer saw firsthand how cannabis can benefit dogs through watching his husky dog, Nikki, when she was in the late stages of cancer. After the first dose, she was up and about. Her appetite was restored and she was able to enjoy her last months because of a homemade tincture of cannabis I created for her. The pain appeared to be controlled and her quality of life increased dramatically. Dr. Kramer takes his veterinary oath very seriously. Being admitted to the profession of veterinary medicine, I solemnly swear to use my scientific knowledge and skills for the benefit of society through the protection of animal health and welfare, the prevention and relief of animal suffering, the conservation of animal resources, the promotion of public health, and the advancement of medical knowledge. He believes he is living up to that oath when he includes cannabis consultations as part of his overall treatment plan for pet patients through his veterinary practice Enlightened Veterinary Therapeutics. How does marijuana affect pets? Cannabis, sometimes referred to as medical marijuana, can work as an appetite stimulant and has even been used effectively for cats with behavior issues and dogs with arthritis. Dr. Kramer shared, at the end of life, it is so painful to see a pet whose mind is fully there, but their body isn't. Cannabis can offer great relief and make their final days of life so much more comfortable. Dr. Kramer shared with me a common expression used widely in veterinary practices, never let the sun set without steroids. He'd like to change that to, never let the sun set without cannabis. I shared with him my recent experience with my own dog, Sanchez. Thankfully Sanchez is now fully recovered with the help of rest and acupuncture, but before he got treatment for a slipped disc in his neck, he was in massive pain. Had I known about Dr. Kramer 6 months ago, I would have consulted with him. What do you think? Should medical marijuana be legalized for pets? Thanks for taking our poll and sharing your thoughts in the comment below. Have you seen the new Adoptable Pets page on Care2? Check it out here. Please also share with your friends. We'd love your help in finding homes for these adorable animals. Delivering come, 4 paws at a time.
Article number 8. New York PD spends 1 million hours making 440,000 marijuana possession arrests over the last decade. Wow. It's a lot of hours. It's a lot of money. Take it away, B.
NYPD spent 1 million hours making 440,000 marijuana possession arrests over last decade. By Matt Sledge. Source, HuffingtonPost.com. New York, the NYPD spent 1 million hours making 440,000 arrests for low-level marijuana possession charges between 2002 and 2012, according to a new report released Tuesday, just as legislative leaders in Albany are deciding whether to pass a bill reforming drug laws. The Drug Policy Alliance and the Marijuana Arrest Research Project, pro-drug law reform groups that commissioned the report, said its findings show a huge waste of police resources. We cannot afford to continue arresting tens of thousands of youth every year for low-level marijuana possession, Alfredo Carrasquillo, a civil rights organizer with the activist group Vocal NY, said in a release. We can't afford it in terms of the negative effect it has on the future prospects of our youth, and we can't afford in terms of police hours. The drug reform proposal from Governor Andrew Cuomo would decriminalize small amounts of marijuana in public view. Possessing 25 grams or less of marijuana kept out of sight is currently a violation, subject to a $100 penalty in New York State. Thousands of New York City residents, a disproportionate number of them black or Latino, have been arrested for emptying their pockets on the order of police during stop-and-frisk encounters. Cuomo has made reforming the marijuana law a top legislative priority this year. In June, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg and New York City Police Department Commissioner Raymond Kelly made the surprise announcement that they, too, supported Cuomo's plan. In 2012, according to the report, the NYPD made 39,218 low-level possession arrests. The report assumed police spent an average of 2.5 man-hours on such arrests, amounting to 98,045 hours in 2012. The NYPD did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the Drug Policy Alliance's numbers. Activists have been sharply critical of Bloomberg's record on marijuana, pointing out that during his tenure, the NYPD has arrested more New Yorkers for marijuana possession than the last three mayors combined. But in February, Bloomberg announced that New Yorkers would no longer have to be held in jail overnight for possession.
Thanks, B. All right, everyone, that's all I have for this week. Till next week, y'all have a good day, good night, good week. Bye-bye.
We pollinated your minds. Now, go pollinate the world.